Creative Babble.
After the jury found Gage Bethune guilty of first-degree felony murder, he was taken into custody, where he sat in jail awaiting sentencing.
Not long after Gage's conviction, his defense attorney hired individuals to approach jurors to get more information on their verdict. During one encounter, one of the individuals approached a juror at her home. The juror noticed the individual was carrying a gun. She felt intimidated, which launched a police investigation.
As part of Carbondale Police Department's investigation, they began listening in on Gage's already recorded jail phone calls. And you'll never guess what Gage was talking to people about.
Yeah, according to the special prosecutor, David Neal, who assisted David Robinson, quote, "We had evidence that he was selling drugs with the assistance of people on the outside while he was incarcerated in the Jackson County Jail."
Unreal. I mean, Gage has just been convicted of felony murder and faces 20 to 60 years in prison. What the heck was he thinking?
Yeah, my first reaction when I heard this was, that's what criminals do. They commit crimes. He's just continuing on. It was just so blatant, though, and every inmate knows their conversations are being recorded.
It's almost like he knows that he's about to get out of jail, or maybe he just doesn't care.
So then they found out that he was dealing drugs from jail. He was calling his girlfriend, his brother, his friend, talking about the drugs, where it is, how much it is to sell for, where it should be kept, and all the code names for all these drugs. So Robinson brought that to the judge. And then the judge said...
So the judge wasn't interested at all in the fact that Gage may have been participating in some kind of drug distribution while he was in jail.
You're not a bad man. You're not a bad man. I'm not a bad woman. You're not a bad man. You're not a bad man. I'm not a bad woman.
I'm John Taylor with the Twisted Podcast.
And I'm Javier Leyva with the Pretend Podcast. And this is Criminal Conduct, Season 4, Getting Away with Murder.
This is Jess Betancourt, the host of DNA ID, the only true crime podcast that exclusively covers cases solved using forensic genealogy. DNA ID goes behind the headlines to answer your questions about this remarkable new crime-solving tool, how it works, how cases are selected, why the cases were unsolved for so long, and how the justice system is addressing it. I include input from law enforcement to give you the inside scoop that we all crave with a straightforward, no-nonsense delivery. You can find DNA ID on any podcast platform. Episodes come out weekly on Mondays.
The jury convicted Gage Bethune on June 14th, 2018.
I spoke to Monica Zukas several times during June and July, and I just couldn't figure out why the sentencing wasn't taking place. I remember saying to her, something just doesn't feel right to me.
The sentencing was finally scheduled for August 15th, but in early August, Gage tried to fire his attorney, Michael Websick. The judge denied his request because he didn't have another attorney lined up. So Judge Mark Clark confirmed August 15th as the sentencing date.
Just days before the sentencing, Gage indicated that he had released his current attorney and hired Chicago-based attorney Steven Greenberg, who at one point had represented R. Kelly.
If you remember, during one of his interviews, Greenberg referred to the convicted child molester R. Kelly as a real victim. How will Greenberg defend Gage Bethune? With Gage Bethune now having a new attorney, Judge Clark postponed his sentencing to September of 2018. This allowed his new attorney to get up to speed and time to file post-trial motions.
Gage's new attorney, Steven Greenberg, argued it's not murder. But it didn't really matter because 12 jurors had already reviewed the evidence and decided that Gage Bethune was responsible for Praveen's death. It appeared Gage's legal maneuvering was too little too late.
A day after this Jackson County man is found guilty in her son's murder, Praveen Varghese's mother speaks out.
Gage on the stand saying, "I hit him." I wanted to hear that. And I think that meant to me more than the verdict. I am so thankful that we got this for him so he can rest in peace and we can live with these beautiful memories.
After many delays, Gage's sentencing day finally arrives. Here's John's interview with Lovely.
So talk about what the sentencing date on September 17, 2018.
He walks in street clothes from jail and no shackles, nothing. And I thought, this is really strange, you know? So I asked, even before that, that day, the judge comes in to the courtroom so early. He never did that. Always he comes in after the guy announces, you know, the judge comes and all that. This guy comes in, he's putting the papers here, he's moving things. He was like kind of panic mode. And Gage comes in and Robin, I asked Robinson, why is he like this? And he said, I don't know, I have to find out. By then, the judge came in, the court came into session, and the judge started to speak. And he's like, one side of the courtroom is going to be upset with what I'm going to say. If you can't handle it, I want you to leave. So I'm thinking it's Gage's side because, you know, it's either 20 years or how many more. That is what it is, right? And then he started to say things which, to this day, I'm thinking, was he talking English or some other language? Because I did not understand. So Monica looks at me and she's like, this doesn't sound good. And she got up and she left. And after so many minutes, she comes back and they're just still talking. And Priya goes, what is he saying? I said, I have no idea. And then only thing I remember him saying is he's putting the verdict aside and ordering a new trial. After he said that, we were in shock. So Robinson turned back and looked at us and he told us to stay, don't leave. And they left the room, Gage's side left, and Robinson came and he kneeled in front of me, held my hand, and he said, I have no idea what just happened here, but I promise you I'll find out. I said, it's okay. It is like, what is this?
So, John, I'm not a legal scholar, but I was shocked when I heard what the judge did.
Yeah, I mean, usually when someone is convicted of a crime, it takes years and years for that conviction to be overturned, either through appeals or multiple trials, or in rare instances, a dedicated innocence group will devote years trying to uncover new evidence. Then and only then does a convicted criminal possibly go free.
What this case showed was that there was one more possibility, one that most people don't even know exists in our legal system.
Yeah, the trial judge has the power to override the jury if he or she thinks there was an error or some kind of injustice.
I mean, I guess I always knew it was possible, but I just never expected it. I always thought that the jury's decision was final.
Yeah, it's very rare and much less so in a felony murder case.
So the judge set aside Gage's guilty verdict, but the question is, why? So John, could this be another case of corruption or small town politics, the good old boy club system at work?
I don't think so. I mean, the judge had many opportunities. He could just simply have sided with the defense, and he didn't. He did this completely on his own.
Even during the trial, every little break that we would get, the sessions that you have break periods, everybody goes out. My car from the third floor immediately comes down, talks to Websick. Every single break. And then when he goes back, he gives me the stare. He just looks at me like I'm going to burn you up. He should be talking to Robinson.
Mike Carr, if you remember, was the state's attorney for Jackson County who refused to prosecute Gage. As Lovely pointed out, it was odd for him to be interacting with the defense and not the prosecution.
Because the judge's actions were so unusual, it's easy to come up with theories to paint the judge in an unfavorable light. You know, like if there's some sort of secret motivation behind his decision. But the real reason that the judge set aside the conviction was because of possibly confusing wording in the original criminal indictment against Gage.
In the judge's official ruling, he believed the jury may have been confused by the use of the word knowingly. It wasn't even an error. It was just a concern.
In the grand jury indictment, it said, quote, Gage Bethune knowingly made a physical contact of an insulting or provoking nature, unquote. That was it.
Yet Black's Law Dictionary defines knowingly as with knowledge, consciously. An individual acts knowingly when he acts with awareness of the nature of his conduct. In another definition of knowingly, it says it can't be because of an accident or mistake.
Yeah, but that's so confusing because for felony murder, it specifically states that the death can be intentional or an accident.
It's confusing to me too, because you have to have intent for some of it, like the aggravated battery, but it can be accidental for other aspects, like the death.
Exactly. What did Gage have to knowingly do and what could have been accidental? And you also have to take into account direct and foreseeable. How does knowingly fit into all that?
Yeah, it's hard to say.
With all the semantics going on here, whether Gage actually is legally responsible for Praveen's death just seems irrelevant now, doesn't it? It's kind of crazy. This is like a fourth dimensional trial because the judge also noted that there was sufficient evidence for the conviction and that there was no misconduct on anyone's part, yet he let Gage walk free.
Yep, the judge has full discretion within the courtroom. He or she can basically do whatever they want. So neither Javier nor I are attorneys, and we have zero experience sitting on a bench. So we wanted to bring in an experienced judge to see what she had to say about this. Here is retired judge and former criminal defense attorney Ellen Leesfield talking about overturning a verdict.
How common is it for a judge to overturn a conviction?
It's uncommon. It's uncommon. I don't know that I ever did it. I spent 10 years in the criminal courts. And I don't know that I ever did it. But were I faced with an injustice, I think I would be willing to do it. We always say the juries eventually get it right. It's so hard to sit and second guess a jury verdict or even a judge's decision when you weren't there the entire time. I always say to people, you know, they'll say, how could the jury have done this? Or how could the judge have done that? And I always say, unless you sat in that courtroom for 5 days and listened to the evidence, you can't sit the next day and Monday morning quarterback a decision. I'm a little surprised the judge waited till sentencing. Usually judges will, they'll wait for the case to be over. A lot of times a defense attorney will move at the close of the state's case. The defense attorney will make a motion for a judgment. They'll say, judge, even if everything the plaintiff or the state put on is true, as a matter of law, this man should not be convicted. And that's an opportunity for the court to say, yeah, you're right. But a judge will very often say, well, let it go to the jury. Let's see what a jury does. And maybe the jury will get it right. And I kind of hope the jury will get it right so they don't have to overturn the conviction. So then at the conclusion of the case, after the verdict, the judge has another opportunity. The defense lawyer will renew his motion for a judgment, notwithstanding the verdict. It's called JNOV, a judgment notwithstanding the verdict. And the judge has an opportunity at that time to overturn the verdict, which they rarely do, which is rarely done. But in this case, I guess the judge must have slept on it, shall we say, over a period of weeks, and maybe didn't sleep so well on it, and maybe decided at that point to overturn it. Having heard, being the only other person, not you and not me, but other than the jury, the only other person with the power to do something, he did it. So it's understandable because he heard the whole case and that was his decision.
it came down to semantics, right? It came down to one word that the judge said was problematic, and that word was knowingly. And how important is that word, knowingly? Like, do you come across that word often in trials?
In criminal court, knowingly is everything. In criminal court, it's another word for it is mens rea, M-E-N-S-R-E-A, which is intent. And so to commit a crime, you have to have intent. You don't commit crimes by accident. There's a manslaughter charge, like third degree manslaughter, I guess, where you don't intend the outcome. The person dies and you certainly don't intend it. And that would be a case where maybe there was a fight. And certainly fights occur all the time, and then somebody ends up dying. So did he knowingly punch the other person? Well, yeah, I'm sure he did knowingly punch the other person if they had a fight. But did he have any mens rea that would result in the death? Did he have any knowledge that would ultimately result in the death of the decedent? No. I mean, so yes, could that have confused the jury? The jury sitting back there, did he knowingly punch the guy? Well, sure, he knowingly punched the guy, but did he intend the result? And that's key. But that knowingly is, of course, very important, but you can't just throw that word around. It has to be, there has to be some intent in the result. So sounds to me like the judge did the right thing and must have had a lot of sleepless nights before he did it. Just setting aside a jury verdict is a bold move for a judge. That has to be done sometimes. Otherwise, the judge wouldn't have the power to do it. The judge has the power under the law to do it. And that power is instilled in that judge for just that reason. Otherwise, we just have a little AI machine sitting up there calling balls and strikes. But the judge has to be a human being who can consider all the factors and make a human decision. And apparently the judge did that.
Now, with the judge's decision, the case now goes back to the special prosecutor's office.
Where does the case stand now? Like, what's the pathway forward?
The case is still open, still with David Robinson. And that's all I know. I mean, he always tells me he will never give up.
So, okay, so there's still hope that something legal or within the judicial system could have happened.
If nothing happens, I want somebody to say what the judge did is wrong. That needs to be corrected.
You don't have to go too far out of bounds to find people to be completely shocked and astounded by what the judge did, I feel.
A date has not yet been set for a new trial. You know, not much is known about Gage's life now, apart from the fact that he is a father of a young girl. And he's a self-employed construction worker.
Welcome to another round of Boardroom or Miro Board. Today we talk retrospectives with Agile coach Maria. Let's go. First question. You've spent 2 hours in a team retro, but the only input you've heard is Dave's. Boardroom or Miro Board?
Boardroom. In Miro, Dave can't hog the space because everyone can add thoughts anonymously, online, at the same time.
Correct. Next. You need the team to act on feedback fast, so you turn all those retro notes into Jira tasks instantly.
Miro all the way. And I can assign those tasks to teammates.
You're nailing this. Now, you see hundreds of sticky notes from the retro. A real mess. But you organize them into 5 themes in just seconds.
Miro, I basically get back an entire hour when I use its AI tools for clustering.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people running actually enjoyable and actionable retros in Miro. Get your first 3 boards free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.
We're so excited.
Yeah. So, you know, we were just thinking, like, I would like to have the scholarship to have some kind of connection with SIU.
We met up with lovely Monica, Praveen's friends and family, on the 9th anniversary of Praveen's death. Each year, Lovely and her family trek deep into the woods to locate the exact spot where Praveen's body was found.
We usually walk deep into the woods to where he's found behind coals.
Yeah, but you know, when you get there, it's a clear area like this. You walk in through the really deep
woods, but then you get to a clear area.
Lovely places a frame picture of Praveen on the ground with some flowers. And then the family begins to sing.
And we pray that our unity may one day be restored. And
the family members take turns saying a prayer in Praveen's honor.
We thank you now for Praveen and what he meant to each of us. As we honor his memory, make us more aware that you are the one from whom comes every perfect gift, including the gift of eternal life through Jesus Christ. We remember how Praveen died. We remember the initial loss, the sadness, and the emptiness. And so we celebrate Praveen's death into life.
After the vigil, we headed to Southern Illinois University, you know, where Praveen went to college. The Varghese family awards a scholarship in Praveen's honor each year. This year's scholarship went to criminal justice student Consuela Moll.
It was very, like, overwhelming, and because, like, I know that it's, like, a really sad, like, and the only reason I'm getting the scholarship is under, like, these circumstances, so it's just, I mean, I feel honored.
It's a little bit,
yeah.
A mother knows her child, maybe even better than he knows himself, but there were secrets Praveen kept from his family.
So then he went and got the tattoo. He always used to say, "Mommy, I'm going to get a tattoo, and that will say, 'Love, Mom.'" I'm like, "No." I said, "You're going to be in law enforcement. You can't get a tattoo."
Lovely didn't know it until she saw his body, but Praveen got a tattoo on his chest with the words, "Fear God."
Matthew chapter 10, verse 28 says, "Don't be afraid of those who want to kill your body. They cannot touch your soul. Fear only God, who can destroy both soul and body in hell." Today, at the vigil honoring Praveen's life, Lovely, Praveen's father, sister, friends, all are wearing a shirt with the words "Fear God" written on the exact same spot as Praveen's tattoo. Many people who first listened to the story believed that the judge's reversal was a grave injustice and erodes the public trust in the justice system. But Lovely's thoughts on the trial and the judge overturning the verdict are much more complex and extremely personal.
What is your best theory as to why the judge just overturned the jury and let Gage walk out?
I really, for some reason, I think he could not sentence Gage for all those years. That is one thing in my mind. And the other thing is, he probably was threatened. He was told to do this. I don't know. If he could not sentence him, he was going to retire anyway in a couple of months. Why couldn't he wait one more month and give it to the upcoming judge, the duty of sentencing him? You know, if he has a hard time sentencing this boy that looks like him. In the victim's impact statement, I was talking to Gage, and I said in that, "I forgive you." And I said, "There are days that I don't even think about you, because every time I think of you, I have to think of my son's injuries. You are the last one to touch my son. I want you to make something out of your life. And if I leave this up to my son, he would have said, 'It's okay, buddy. Go and live your life.'"
Criminal Conduct was written and produced by me, Javier Leyva, with the Pretend Podcast, and John Taylor with the Twisted Podcast. Punit Shenoy, with the Podcast Pundits, helped us with the production and editing on this series. The episodes are also available on Pretend Plus on Apple Podcasts. Our theme music was written and produced by Ruby Rose Fox. Of course, follow us on social media. We are at Criminal Con on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. All right, we'll talk next week.
Creative Back.